Hi, it's Diane. On my mind, the push to vaccinate 70% of Americans, the spread of the Delta variant, and what it will take to put an end to COVID. For many Americans, the beginning of summer is a return to normal. Family gatherings are back, indoor dining is in, kids are at camp, and many workers are returning to the office. We can thank the COVID vaccine for the plummeting case numbers and hospitalizations. But vaccine intake is uneven across the country, with states in the South and Midwest lagging. Now, as the highly contagious Delta variant makes its way into this country, doctors say we could start seeing an uptick of cases once again. To learn more about the state of COVID, I spoke with Dr. Carlos Del Rio. Dr. Del Rio, what do we know about the spread of the Delta variant in this country?
Well, Diane, I think that what we know is that COVID, the SARS-CoV-2 virus, is a type of virus. It's a respiratory RNA virus. And these viruses, when they're reproducing, when they're multiplying, they tend to mutate and they tend to produce errors. And some of those errors lead to mutations that are advantageous to the virus. So when they're advantageous, then the virus tends to transmit more effectively. That's one of the mutations that the virus likes. So we have the alpha variants. Now we have the Delta variant. The Delta variant likely emerged in India and then has acquired additional mutations and has gone to the UK, has gone to other places, has come to this country. It's much more transmissible. So about 3 weeks ago, it was maybe 2% of cases in the US. Now it's close to 20% of cases in the US. And pretty soon, it's probably going to be the predominant variant in the US simply because it sort of outcompetes the other variants because it's much more transmissible. So what we know is that a more transmissible virus is going to cause more infections. And because it causes more infections, it's likely going to cause more hospitalizations and possibly also more deaths. Now, we need to remember that it is primarily occurring among non-vaccinated people.
So how could it affect those who've been vaccinated?
The evidence we have is that if you have completed your course of vaccinations and you're 2 weeks out, you're fully vaccinated, you may get infected with the Delta variants, but you are very unlikely to get sick or to die. So the best protection we have against this Delta variant is actually to be fully vaccinated, because if you have been fully vaccinated, you essentially are protected from severe disease or death. You may still get infected, but again, if you get infected and you don't get sick, it's not that terrible. And to me, it's almost like we're seeing the hurricane coming in and people are just waiting to do the right thing and get out and, you know, wear their windows, etc. We know this is coming. We should get vaccinated now in order to be protected. And if you haven't been vaccinated today, every minute counts.
What makes this more infectious than the variants we've seen thus far?
It likely is that the mutation makes the virus more likely to attach to the respiratory receptor, to this receptor in the cell surface. And when it attaches to the receptor in the cell surface and does it more effectively, it probably also produces higher amounts of virus and therefore is more transmissible.
Does it, for those who've been unvaccinated, cause a more serious case of COVID?
There's a lot of debate around that. Some people think it may cause a more severe disease. Some people don't. But if you have more cases, let's say if it's more transmissible, even if it had the same, you know, the rate of complications was the same, if you got more cases, you're going to have more people sick.
And are they going to be sicker?
We don't know that. We don't know that yet, because you got to remember that the most important predictor of being very sick was age. And the people we're seeing infected nowadays with the Delta variant, most of the unvaccinated people are young people. So they don't get as sick, right?
Well, one would hope they don't get as sick. But if the variant is now at the 20% level, if it increases and rises in its spread, couldn't it get to a point where it's so lethal that it could make these young people quite sick?
And that is exactly what happened in India, right? A lot of young people ended up getting very sick and dying. So that possibility exists. And again, I think the way to prevent it is getting vaccinated. And that's why President Biden had said that by July 4th, he wanted at least 70% of Americans receiving at least one dose. I really think that receiving one dose is not enough, because in order to be protected against the Delta variant, you need to have received both doses. And we're not going to get there. We're not going to get even to the goal of one dose to 70%. So I'm very, very concerned of the large number of individuals in many communities who are yet to be vaccinated.
Why is it, do you suppose, that they are so resistant, these younger people, to getting a vaccine?
Well, I think there's several issues happening. The first issue was that, as I said before, young people don't tend to get as sick. When you're older, you know, if I give you a vaccine and I say, hey, this vaccine is going to protect you from dying, you like it, you say, hey, that's pretty good. But I talk to a lot of young people who say, well, this is no worse than a cold. Why should I get a vaccine? So that's one thing. The second thing is that there's been a lot of misinformation and a lot of fake news out there. And one of the most common ones is telling people that this vaccine's impact fertility, which is totally false. But a lot of young people, especially young women, are very resistant to getting vaccinated because they say, well, you know, I want to have kids. And I want to emphasize there's absolutely no evidence that this vaccine's impact fertility. And then the last is that, you know, as everything in this pandemic, we have politicized things. So what is very ironic is that this vaccines, we really need to say, it was pretty clear that they were developed during President Trump's administration. This is a vaccine that we all own to the efforts that were put during his administration to create the vaccines. Yet, for whatever reason, Republicans have a very high rate of hesitancy. They don't want to get the vaccine. So that's a part that, you know, the partisanship around the vaccine is really something that, to me, is very hard to understand.
You said, as we all know, President Biden is moving, pressuring, hoping for 70% of the population to be vaccinated. Where do we stand right now?
In the U.S., about 60% of the population has received at least one dose, and about 45% has received both doses. However, this varies significantly by region, by state, by zip code, by county. There are some counties, there's some zip codes that, you know, 80% of the population has been vaccinated. There's some others that is less than 20% of the population. So it really varies. And unfortunately, a lot of the areas that have more unvaccinated people are in the southern U.S. And again, talking about the political spectrum, you know, if you were to superimpose who voted for Trump versus who voted for Biden, it would almost look identical. Those that voted for Biden are more likely to be vaccinated. Those that voted for Trump are more likely to be unvaccinated. So there is also that political divide that, as I said, has made this, you know, this whole pandemic, the partisanship around vaccines, around masking, around all these different things, has really been something very unfortunate.
What percentage of the younger population age 18 to 29-year-olds have been vaccinated?
Again, it depends, but it's a lot lower. It's probably in the 20s to 30%.
And among the elderly, that percentage would be?
Oh, much higher. If you look at people over 65, it's almost 85% of the population has been immunized. Clearly, the older individuals, again, you know, when you're told, I got a vaccine that is going to prevent you from dying, people rapidly wanted to take it. Now, we still are seeing a lot of disparities related to race, ethnicity. I think if you look at whites, you have a much higher immunization rate than if you do among African Americans or Hispanics. So the number of people unvaccinated come in different flavors.
At this point, do you expect to see large outbreaks this summer?
Well, that's a good question. I don't think we're going to see huge outbreaks, but we're going to see small outbreaks. We're going to see little sort of almost like small fires, right? Like campfires. I hope we don't see forest fires because there's enough people vaccinated that I think that will not happen. But clearly, you're going to have communities with a lot of unvaccinated individuals that if the virus gets there, you're going to have an outbreak in that community.
And you're saying in those communities, you're talking about a large percentage have not been vaccinated.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's, you know, that's going to be a really important thing to look at. Yesterday, the Institute for Healthcare Metrics and Evaluation and the COVID Collaborative released a vaccine hesitancy tool. And if you look at that map, you can go down to the zip code and it will tell you what percentage of the population in that specific zip code are vaccine hesitant.
So, Dr. Del Rio, what do you believe could be the key to overcoming that lagging, that hesitancy?
I think you need a multi-pronged approach. I think, number one, I think we need to get Republican and Democrats, but primarily Republican representatives of Congress, to go to their constituencies and tell them, I got the vaccine, get the vaccine, this is our vaccine, it was developed by President Trump, this is safe, you need to take it. People need to talk about it. Powerful people need to talk about it. Number two, we need to work with trusted messengers. In other words, you know, the churches, the community organizations, the primary care physicians, so they start, again, talking about the vaccine. I think something that is going to be very important is also the FDA needs to approve these vaccines. A lot of people still are hesitant because they say these vaccines are not fully approved. They're still on an emergency use authorization. I know that Pfizer and Moderna have both submitted to the FDA their packages for approval. I would hope that the FDA approves these vaccines soon, because I think once you get a full approval, the world changes. After there's a full approval, the companies can do direct-to-consumer advertising. They can be sold. They can be pushed more effectively. But more importantly, a lot of people are going to say, well, now I trust it because it has FDA approval. So that's the other thing that is going to be necessary, right?
I also wonder whether it's going to take a large outbreak in some of these small resistant communities to then convince the unvaccinated that they better do something quickly.
Well, you know, I hope that's not the case, but you're probably right. I think it's going to happen also that way. So one thing that I think could potentially be helpful is try to identify those areas and really do targeted. I mean, I think we need what in marketing is called hyper-targeting marketing, right? You really need to go to that very specific area and do the marketing right there. I think this is not about national marketing. This is very, very targeted to a very specific area. And you work with local trusted leaders there. I mean, as somebody said to me in a community, in one of these communities, you know, I heard, look, I don't want to hear from you. I don't want to hear from the president. I want to hear from the fireman who sits in church next to me. When that person gets a vaccine and tells me to take the vaccine, I can trust that person. So I think it's very important that we identify those trusted voices in the community and we work with them.
So the other day I saw a photograph of Dr. Fauci and Dr. Jill Biden, the president's wife, speaking in a neighborhood to a particular person. If that isn't enough, why is sitting next to the fireman going to do it?
Well, you know, again, depends who you trust, right? Depends who that trusted person is. I think what you mentioned, that event was really interesting. You know, you had Dr. Fauci went door to door knocking at doors.
I know.
And he got a lot of selfies, but he didn't get a lot of people vaccinated.
So what does that say to you? That he is not trusted or it needs a person that people know?
I think it needs a person that people know. I also think that a lot of those people may have questions and they want somebody that they can trust to answer the questions. I have found commonly that getting people to understand, I mean, I think, you know, you have the people that don't want the vaccine expand the spectrum from those that say, I'll never get vaccinated, to a group that I call, a friend of mine calls them slow to yes. And I like that term. In other words, they're going to say yes, but it's just going to take them some time. And I think we need to sit with them. We need to listen to them. We need to hear their concerns. We need to talk to them. And once they're convinced, once they say, okay, you convinced me, we need to get them vaccinated right away. We need to find a place and take them and get them vaccinated right away.
A quick break. When we come back, the rest of my conversation with Dr. Carlos Del Rio.
DCS Daily.
DCS Daily.
DCS Daily.
It's news,
culture, and curiosities.
From the District, Tacoma Park,
Alexandria,
Friendship Heights,
Hyattsville,
Falls Church,
Northeast Washington, D.C., in your inbox every weekday afternoon.
DCS Daily.
Sign up at dcs.com/newsletter.
dcs.com/newsletter.
Here's the rest of my conversation with Dr. Carlos Del Rio. He's professor of global health and epidemiology at Emory University Rollins School. We spoke Friday morning. What about children under 12 who don't have access to the vaccine yet? If they're living in these high-risk areas or if they're living in an area where even their parents have been vaccinated, what's that going to mean for those children?
Well, I think that's a good question. The answer is we don't know. But what we can say is if you have a small children under 12 in your household, in your community, and everybody around that person is vaccinated, you're in a way creating almost a wall around that individual. And, you know, we do also know that children who get infected are less likely to get sick and less likely to transmit to others. So in a way, I'm less concerned about the people under 12 not vaccinated. I'm more concerned of the people. We know that the people between 19 and 49 are the ones driving the pandemic right now. Those are the people for which we have a vaccine and who we need to get vaccinated.
One of the elements perhaps scaring people off have been the reports of heart inflammation. And those have been verified in people who received the Pfizer drug or the Moderna vaccine. So what do you say to those who've gotten this myocarditis and pericarditis?
Well, that's a very interesting side effect. It's not very common, but it certainly occurs. It's more common in younger individuals and primarily in men. It rarely happens in women. It's more likely to happen in young boys, you know, ages, you know, 15 to 30. And that is the 15 to 25. And that's the group that it's more likely to get that side effect. As I said, it's pretty rare. The CDC has concluded that the risk of getting sick from COVID is higher than the risk of getting myocarditis. And therefore, you should get the vaccine. I think that there is ways around it. We know that the Johnson & Johnson vaccine works very well for young people, young men, and they don't have the side effect of thrombosis that women have. So to me, you know, I mean, my nephew, for example, who's 18 years old, we talked about it and he decided to get the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. And I was very supportive. I said, that's a great idea. So I think, you know, the physician, the healthcare provider needs to talk to the patient and the family and talk about what the options are. I think we are lucky in our country that we have multiple vaccines available. And I think you could, you know, for certain populations, you can get very selective and say, I'd rather have this vaccine than that vaccine.
What happens to a person who develops myocarditis?
Well, you know, what we learn at Wednesday was the CDC meeting of the ACIP, the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices. And what we heard at that meeting is that most people that get myocarditis, most of the young people have a mild disease. Some get hospitalized, but all recover quickly, recover well. There's been, I think, very few deaths, only one or two deaths. But in my mind, you know, any death in a young person is concerning. And to me, that really is worrisome. And that's the reason why, you know, I'm a little hesitant about giving, you know, the Pfizer or Moderna vaccine to a young man when we have other vaccines available.
So what you're saying is you would recommend the Johnson vaccine for those young men?
Yes. Or the other possibility is you can give them the Pfizer and the Moderna vaccine and then delay the second shot. Instead of giving it at 3 weeks or 4 weeks, give it later. We see most cases of myocarditis and pericarditis happen after the second injection. And it's very interesting that in Israel and in the U.S. we're seeing it, and we're giving the vaccines at 3 and 4 weeks as it's indicated. In the U.K., where they spaced out the vaccines more, they're not seeing that side effect.
Interesting. Well, what about the picture globally? The White House says it wants to share 80 million shots with other countries. Is that enough to keep this virus intact?
Oh, it's clearly not enough. You know, at the G7 meeting, the G7 made a commitment of 2 billion doses, of which the U.S. said they will give 500 million. So almost a quarter of the 2 billion committed at the G7 came from the U.S., which I think it's a good commitment, but it's still not enough. You got to think that we need about 11 million doses of vaccine to vaccinate the world.
Dr. Del Rio, you said 11 million to vaccinate.
11 billion.
That's what I thought you meant.
Yeah, 11 billion. So 2 billion, even though it sounds like a lot, is still nowhere close to the 11 billion necessary. There is a major crisis. I think we're seeing the epidemic in the U.S. in many other places where with vaccinations is going away. It's the cases are coming down around the world. And I worry particularly, for example, right now about Latin America. The epidemic is raging. There's a lot of disease. There's a lot of cases. Vaccination rates are still very low. They don't have vaccines. So that's the other component that to me, it's a little bit, I would say, ironic. And in a way, it also infuriates me, right? We have too much vaccine in our country and people don't want to take it. Around the world, they have too much disease and they're looking for vaccines that they cannot get. And I think that disparity is one that personally, I think it's a human tragedy and something that we should not accept.
So it needs a lot more from manufacturers. I mean, where is all that going to come from?
Well, I think several things are needed. I think we need to increase manufacturing capacity in many places. India, Brazil, Argentina, there are many countries that can build up and scale up manufacturing. I think we also need to do temporary lifting of patents so the vaccines can be produced in other places outside Pfizer, Moderna, et cetera. So I think a lot of things are needed. But I also think we need, you know, we're going to need raw ingredients and we're going to need, at the end of the day, we're going to need syringes and needles. So it's going to be it's not just the vaccine. It's all the logistics for administering the vaccine that are going to need to happen, right?
Who's paying for all these vaccines right now?
Well, you know, the great majority of these vaccines, Pfizer, Moderna, were primarily developed and paid by the U.S. government. So it is our taxes that have paid for this. And, you know, again, during the Trump administration, they set up this Operation Warp Speed. And Operation Warp Speed was this private-public partnership to really scale up and ramp up production of the vaccines. It was almost like a Manhattan Project. And it was very successful. I mean, they clearly delivered. They did what they needed to do.
They did what they needed to do with taxpayer money. Now, does that mean that once these drugs go on the market, individuals are going to have to pay for them?
Well, I suspect in the future, these vaccines are going to be a little bit like other vaccines, like the flu vaccine, which your insurance will pay, or otherwise is going to be available over the, you know, at a price. The Pfizer and Moderna have talked about a price of about $25 per dose.
And that is about the same as the flu vaccine.
Now, I'll give you an example. The AstraZeneca vaccine, the Oxford AstraZeneca, which we don't have in this country, that vaccine is probably going to cost about $2 a dose. So a lot of people think that vaccine is going to be the vaccine that is used more widely globally because $25 a dose is simply not at a price that you can actually scale up globally.
But didn't the AstraZeneca vaccine cause and create lots of questions?
There are a lot of questions, but I still think it's a very good vaccine. I still think it's a vaccine that produces good levels of immunity and that produces good levels of protection.
So what's happening in India right now, Dr. Del Rio?
Well, cases are starting to come down in India. And, you know, the government is starting to get more organized. Cases are coming down. They're doing a better job vaccinating. I still think they have a ways to go. But, I mean, India just went through what I would say is probably one of the most horrible outbreaks we've ever seen.
So here in the U.S., we seem to have turned the corner on the pandemic. But now comes this variant. And if we don't get that under control, not only here, but around the world, could that jeopardize progress all over the world?
Oh, there's no doubt about that. And that's why I think that, you know, to say that this pandemic is over is premature. We still have a ways to go. And I think we need to, you know, we need to not lose sight of that, that we still have a ways to go. And we can do it, but it's not, I think calling victory is premature.
Should we be walking around without masks and eating indoors and all the things we're now doing?
Well, you know, I think if you're fully vaccinated, it's okay to do all those things. I still think that when I go, you know, I am outside, I'm not wearing a mask. I still think if I get in a, like, I get in the subway, I get in a plane, I get in a, I'm in a place in the grocery store where it's a lot of crowding, I still wear my mask. But, you know, if I'm with my family and everybody's vaccinated, it's okay. You know, this evening I'm going out for dinner with another group of friends. We're going to sit outside. We're all vaccinated. It's okay. I mean, we cannot continue to be masked and indoors and close our lives forever. That also has enormous consequences for the psyche, for the mental health, for the individual, and for the economy. So we need to start, you know, doing things, but we need to do them with caution, and we need to be thoughtful about what is good to do and what is still unsafe to do.
Before we close, is there anything else you'd like to say to our listeners?
Well, I would like to say to our listeners that if you know somebody who has not been vaccinated, do me a favor and get them vaccinated. Tell them, I mean, I wish we can all wear a button that said, I've been vaccinated, so we can tell others, you know, get your vaccine and talk about your vaccine and talk about how the vaccine has changed your life. To me, as a physician, I don't want to see any more sick people in the hospital with COVID. I in the last year, I've saw too many people very sick. I saw too many people die of COVID. I still see people sick and dying today. All of them are unvaccinated. I think each one of those hospitalizations, each one of those deaths is an unnecessary death. If those persons had been vaccinated, they wouldn't be there. So let's put an end to this. We can do it.
Dr. Del Rio, thank you so much.
Diana, it's been a pleasure talking to you.
That was Dr. Carlos Del Rio. He's Distinguished Professor of Medicine at Emory University School of Medicine and Professor of Global Health and Epidemiology at the Rollins School of Emory University. And that's all for today. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter or send us an email, drpodcast@wamu.org. Our theme music is composed by Jim Brunberg and Ben Landsberg of Wonderly. The show is produced by Rebecca Kaufman and Allison Brody. Our engineer is Michael Kidd. Thanks for listening, all. Be well, stay safe, and for those of you who haven't done it yet, please get that vaccine. I'm Diane Rehn.